Podcast.
I got a feeling that tonight's gonna be
so, Tim.
Yes?
How's your hangover?
Fortunately non-existent for some
Seriously?
Odd reason. Not for lack of effort.
How does that happen?
I don't know.
Mine's not too bad. I thought it would be a lot worse. Like, I got up this morning and I was like, oh, and then I just went away. I think it's because I started drinking really early. Because right after 4CA fumbled, like, the last time, I think.
In a long series of his fumbles?
I think I left. No, I don't know. At some point, my buddy I was watching the game with asked me if I wanted something to drink. And I said yes. And then he gave me, like, a cup. It had a couple of ice cubes in it and a bottle of gin.
Perfect.
And that was the right thing to give me. So Paul got drunk too, right?
Yeah, I think drunk is an understatement. But yeah. Paul had himself a good time.
He's a
champ. He was singing Black Eyed Peas all night, I'm sure.
Really?
No.
No?
This is thrilling, thrilling podcast.
It is. It's good. It's good stuff right here on the podcast, the MGO podcast. All right, I guess we should talk about it. I feel like I haven't read anything. After the game,
other than nuking a couple MGO threads,
yeah,
I haven't looked at anything.
Well, my inbox is spectacular. You get all these people who, like, there's always people who, like, they get downvoted by a bunch of people, and then they get really angry about it, and they send me, like, an angry note.
Yeah.
And most of the time, I'm like, all right, well, let's see what happened, and, you know, you have to tread lightly, otherwise you will get neg-banged and nothing bad will happen to you except you'll have a negative number on your points. But people get pissed off.
But that is an embarrassment worse than death. You must
after yesterday, I just don't care. You got negged a lot yesterday. I'm sorry, you're on your own.
Yeah, I ended up giving somebody -1 billion points, and I will have to remember who it was so that I can restore their points after the...
-1 billion points.
Yeah, I just held down 9 for a while.
This is a great podcast.
Yeah, this is horrible. We should probably start over.
No, it has to stay in. All right, we should talk about what happened.
Bad things.
I think what the worst thing about the game was the fact that Mike Patrick was covering it.
Yeah, Mike Patrick
and talking
kind of made it unbearable.
Talking about, like, starting favorite center David Mossman.
Yeah.
And they both did it.
And Ray Rountree was a very good receiver for the team on this day
was,
as well.
Like, usually, like, you know, some people will make a mistake and it'll be like, oh, you made a mistake, and then it's kind of dumb. But Patrick was just, like, every 20 seconds he was screwing it up. And it's just, that guy sucks.
Yeah.
I guess the big thing is that, like, this is, you know, I'm sure that everywhere online there are people who are leaping off the Rodriguez bandwagon as fast as they possibly can. And, like, 2 weeks ago, Michigan had just beaten Delaware State, and, you know, they had lost a couple of games, but they were competitive and looked like Michigan was going in the right direction. And 2 weeks later, it's like a nuclear holocaust.
Yes. The Penn State game sucked a lot, but you can say, oh, Penn State's a really good team. Illinois, not such a good team. It's been almost a year since they've beaten a team without FCS next to their name on the schedule, and it was really not all that close. There are a couple, or at least one late score by Illinois that kind of made it seem a little further away than it was, but Illinois was definitely the superior team
It's just the same old crap where they turn the ball over and the offensive line just cannot pass protect. It's been an issue all year.
Mm-hmm.
Where I'm doing, like, my protection metrics, and the protection metrics are ending up like 37 of 57, which is about twice what a car line would put in on, like, a kind of crappy day.
Mm-hmm. Which is actually odd when you think about it, because of all the assistants who have been getting a lot of credit, Fry has been, I think, kind of most universally loved as a good position coach. And
yeah.
Is it the talent that he has to work with that's the problem then?
I don't know, man. I think that everybody saw the offensive line go from a complete disaster zone to competent last year, and they're still about where they were last year, so, I mean, maybe they're just topping out at their natural talent level, which isn't particularly high. And then, of course, they lost Molk, who everybody says is the best player on the team. But, I mean, if you look at the guys on the line, you got Schilling, who is a big recruit, and you've got Ortman, who is not, and Hugie, who is definitely not.
Thorstein, who is not. Omame, who is not, although allegedly very.
Mossman was.
Can we please call him Mossman?
Mossman. His name's Mossman. So Mossman was a fairly big-ish recruit. He was like a four-star guy. But, I mean, it's kind of the same thing with the defense where they've got, like, you know, a decent front line, but then all the kids that they've recruited so far are, you know, redshirt freshmen and that kind of stuff, and they'd like to not play them if they don't have to. Mm-hmm. I don't know. And the other thing is, like, so they finally put Obi Eze out of his misery, probably the first player in the history of the Butkus Award to be a semifinalist.
And benched for a walk-on.
The next game. I mean, I knew that Eze was not doing well, but, you know, I mean, the disturbing thing about that is that, like, you know, I don't understand why it's the walk-ons. I mean, it's not like Kovacs has more experience than Emelian. Mm-hmm. And it's not like Leach has more experience than J.B. Fitzgerald. So why do the scholarship players that Michigan has suck so much that mm-hmm. the walk-ons are getting
at least
on the field in front of them?
A slight part of it, and I'm not sure how much of an issue the Emelian knee injury still is, if it's kind of a precautionary, only play him a little. But, I mean,
why
you
are you playing
win,
him on special
games
teams,
too,
though?
Yeah.
I mean, if he's not hurt. I mean, like, the sort of the back-breaking touchdown run that opened the floodgates was Leach getting out of position because he was anticipating a stretch that wasn't coming, and the tailback just outrunning Kovacs. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it was both of those guys.
And Kovacs, like the guy was past him before Kovacs even turned to, like, say, oh, I should chase this guy down.
Yeah, well, I mean, he's a walk-on.
Yeah, and that just is. It's, you know, the team isn't very good.
No, I mean, it's unbelievable. Just the last 2 years, Michigan has run out a walk-on quarterback and two starting walk-ons on defense, with a third getting significant amounts of time. And it's just like, how the hell did this happen?
Yeah.
They're going to be getting on Rodriguez. But all the complaining, and it doesn't really matter because, you know, you're not going to fire him after this year, and you're going to give him a third year, and then you're going to give him a fourth year, because unless the team does not go to a bowl for a third straight year, which is extremely unlikely. I mean, I guess we'll find out, because if the team keeps getting better and fails to be as miserable as it is this year, then shit.
Yeah. So a bowl game, which looked like a certainty following the 4-0 start, it's not so certain anymore, that's for sure. A win over Purdue at Wisconsin or against Ohio State is now necessary. So
yeah, Purdue didn't do that good last week either. But
Illinois didn't do that well the previous 6 weeks either. So.
I don't know. It's just insane. The turnovers are just constant, and part of that, a large part of that, is the freshman quarterbacks and that stuff. But they muffed another punt,
turned it over on downs inside the 1 yard line.
Yeah, I don't know what the deal was with that.
Should we wrap it up, forget about it, move on to the next week, and worry about Purdue, I guess, in Wisconsin and Ohio State?
I guess. I don't know. Shit.
Aside from turnovers are an issue, we already knew that. The goal line stand was obviously the huge momentum shift in the game. I think if Michigan scores there, it's probably a similar score in the opposite direction with the mental state of Illinois at that point.
Yeah.
It just is.
I don't know how this defense could be any good, and it sucks. Mm-hmm. And it should suck, given the people are running out onto the field. It's just, I mean, even if Rodriguez is a good coach, he's in such a hole at this point, just in terms of everything, that he's going to have to really pull out some stuff next year if he's going to stick around long term. I mean, if they go 7-5 next year, he will be, I guess I don't see any way that he's not fighting for his job in year four.
Mm-hmm.
And then, I mean, it's coming down to this or that. There's one bounce here, one bounce there, and the Illinois game just puts Rodriguez's tenure, it's a huge swing game.
Mm-hmm.
Like now it's possibility that Rodriguez gets fired as soon as it's reasonable to fire a coach, which is 4 years, I think, is extant, and I don't think it was before the Illinois game. Like, I think if he beats Illinois and he has a team that can do that and beats Purdue and play some crappy team in a bowl game and wins that, then he's basically on the right path. And now it's just like, Jesus.
Yeah. And that, oh, the bowl game, they must make a bowl game, please. I don't, at this point, get bowl eligible, play in Detroit. See, for the sake of progress from year one to year two, and then move along and hope it's better in the next year. This is high energy podcast.
Purdue has a football team.
They're a bad football team. Which,
a few
weeks ago, would have seemed like a very winnable game.
Yeah, it still seems winnable.
It's winnable. No, maybe not. I think a few weeks ago you could have said Michigan wasn't a very bad team.
Yeah. So, well, if they would stop having the turnovers all the time, that's my advice. Like, don't turn it over all the time, and then good stuff happens.
Yes. Points, victories, etc.
Purdue, they've got Joey Elliott.
Purdue is, let's see, total offense 65th in the nation, scoring offense 80th in the nation at 24.5 points per game. Surprisingly, Michigan still leads the conference in scoring after two horrible outputs.
That's because of the Delaware State game.
That's true, but I mean, everybody has played their Delaware State this point in the year too, except for one team. Oh, and that's Illinois, and they haven't played Fresno, which is actually going to be a competitive game, most likely. Unlike when Illinois played Michigan, kill me now. They are good in pass efficiency defense. Their total defense is 65th in the nation. They give up 363 yards a game. Rushing defense, they're 88th. That is a bad rushing defense, but so was Illinois. So, God, I just, from the performances ranging from Notre Dame to Illinois, it's so hard to know what to think of this team, I think, is the biggest issue.
Well, I think we know it's a bad team.
We know it's a bad team, but is it a team that can run for however many yards against a mediocre to good defense, or is it a team that is not shut down by Illinois, but they certainly didn't have their way with them like they should have?
Yeah.
So, like, relying on past, not even results, performances to predict for the future is, like, they're so widely varying in terms of samples that you just don't know what to expect on a week-to-week basis. And, don't want to have to say this, but it's like the Michigan State teams under John L. Smith. On a macro level, you knew what was going to happen, but on a micro level, it's hard. Game to game, you don't know what the hell they're going to do.
No, this team has been very consistent in its being bad at football. I still think that this is just a huge rebuilding job, because honestly, when you look at the stuff that Carr left over for him, I mean, it was just, there's nothing there. And then the attrition obviously hasn't helped any. So, mm-hmm. I mean, and losing those two linebackers from the recruiting class before basically they even got to campus, it was bad. And I mean, the team has like something like 70 players on it. They're graduating. They're gonna have 16 starters back next year and all that stuff. So I mean, they should continue to dig out next year. And if they don't, well then. But chances of that aren't great. I mean, you're gonna have almost everybody back. So but fuck it. This is pointless.
Smash apart what you create.
So the Big Ten exists, and we're talking with Jamie of JustCoverBlog.com about it.
Yeah, what game do you guys want to start with? Why don't we start with the front runner?
Okay, what's that?
All right, that's Iowa.
Oh, okay, sure.
I mean, they're the front runner as we speak, correct?
Yes.
They host Northwestern in the same sleepy noon time slot that almost cost them yesterday.
Yeah, that was that game was crazy.
That game, what are you talking about crazy? I had the minus 17 the whole way. That was easy money, right?
That was that was crazy.
Yeah. Iowa spent, I've never quite seen a team down double digits going into the fourth quarter cover a 2-touchdown plus spread in the end. That was definitely one for the record books, and I guess you could probably cue all the storylines that, hey, that's the type of magical win you need in order to, you know, pull off an undefeated season. And now they play Northwestern. I think it's going to be the same thing. I think they're going to be heavily favored, but it's hard to trust them. I don't know how much you guys saw of that game yesterday, but man, Stanzi could not have played as poorly through three quarters.
Yeah, four picks in the third quarter alone, I believe.
Yeah, that was crazy. Yeah. And then there was like the overturned Indiana touchdown, which was a joke.
Oh yeah,
like that was. I mean, there's with the in like college football has a really really bad habit for, you know, having like 1,000 records, all of which mean nothing because now people play 12 games and they play against loser competition and they play bowl games and they're counting it in the stats. So now everybody every year it's like, oh, this guy's the blank, blank, and it's blank, and blank, blank. And there's no better example of that than Juice Williams is now like the sixth all-time passer in Big Ten history, right? So,
yeah.
So, what the hell was I talking
Kyle
about?
Kyle Orton, I think, right?
Oh, and so, but there is, because of the institution of replay, we are living in the era of the worst calls in college football history.
Oh, absolutely.
Because there is now the certain genre of call where something goes up to the replay booth and it's right on the field and then the replay booth screws it up. So there was an Iowa game a few years ago where Antonio Bass was basically acting as a Wildcat quarterback and he fumbled because his elbow hit the ground and it was called correctly down on the field and they overturned it on review. And that was, I mean, that Indiana touchdown was just as bad because you can see on the replay that the field turf is changing color as the guy rakes his foot over it. And they there's a guy 2 feet from it and he gets it right. And then the guy up in the booth screws it up. And I mean, that's.
Well, yeah, you're exactly right. The referee was right there.
And there was indisputable evidence on the video that it was a touchdown.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, that guy should be horsewhipped.
Well, and then the Hoosiers promptly missed the gimme field goal right after that. So that was a huge,
huge
swing all around, but they were still able to maintain a double-digit lead. But there was another weird play in the Minnesota-Michigan State game that I'm still not entirely sure should have been a touchdown. But
all right, well, Northwestern versus Iowa. Iowa can obviously lose to anybody. Hasn't yet. What are you seeing in this one?
Well, I'm going to stick with Iowa, and you know I would still stick with them as a favorite, in the game. I just think that they their history is so good at Kinnick Stadium, but I really wouldn't be that interested in investing too much into that pick because they got lucky last week. They could be looking ahead to Ohio State and who they play the following week, and then there's this weird dynamic with Northwestern. They focus for whatever reason on the Iowa game. You know, I don't know, you know, why that is, but it seems to have worked. I think they've beaten them 3 out of the last 4 years, including last year, and I believe the last time they played on this. I mean, that's a reluctant lean to Iowa as far as, you know, maybe covering the spread. But I wouldn't surprise me if we have a repeat of yesterday. I mean, Stanzi just. He played so badly, even though he pulled out in the end, he played so badly that you just know that he is costing them a game at some point now in the future. And, you know, like you said, they could lose to anybody. That game could be Saturday or it could be one of the final two ones, but it's happening.
Yeah, I don't think we'll ever see a game like that. Like that interception return by Sash was just, I mean, that hit four guys before it hit Sash.
Yeah,
I know.
It literally hit four guys. I mean, like, Dr. Saturday tweeted something to the effect of, if that had happened in a video game, I would have smashed the controller.
I don't think I've ever seen a ball deflect off that many people and fall incomplete before, let alone fall into something that could be positive for either team. You know?
No, yeah, I mean, it's just, that was the football that killed Kennedy. All right, but so
it was definitely, though, a more fun game to watch.
That third quarter was completely bats. It was just crazy. Like,
yeah.
I'd never before, and I got in the car to drive over to my buddy's place to watch the Illinois game. And by the time I had gotten there, Iowa had scored a 92-yard and like a 64-yard touchdown.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah.
In the 10 minutes I was in the car, it's just insane.
Yeah, I couldn't believe it. And Tim, what do you think about Iowa covering the spread on a touchdown? You know, as the clock is basically expiring.
Yeah, as a gambling man, I'm sure you like that
Steve
one.
Steve Spurrier of the Big Ten, like I say, he doesn't do it like Steve Spurrier, but it happens that way sometimes.
Yeah.
But we have a pick for Iowa, a very tenuous one in that game. Well, what's up next?
Yeah, we got Wisconsin at Indiana. Hoosiers obviously coming off that big, off that heartbreaker, I guess. Although it ended up being a pretty wide margin, it still managed to be a heartbreaker.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, the Hoosiers are really going to kick themselves. They, you know, they haven't really won a game that they should have lost, but they've lost three games that they could have easily won. And it is so hard to get to a bowl game coming out of Bloomington that, man, they're just going to regret those outcomes against Michigan, Northwestern, and Iowa. Arguably, they had all three games dead to right. But it has resulted in a 6-2 record against the spread. They are at home, so I would definitely think of an Indiana cover in this game because I think they're going to be underdogs probably by about 6 or 7 points. So I'll take my chances with Indiana to at least cover.
All right, so that's a close win for Wisconsin.
Yeah. The Badgers, I don't know how much you saw of them, but Jonathan Clay definitely had it rolling on Saturday. I don't know what his final numbers were. I don't know if he played much in the second half, but he had over 100 yards in the first half, and half of them were after contact. So I'm already kind of thinking about maybe taking the over on the number of yards he might have against Michigan. A little kind of future lean there, guys.
Yeah. Well, he only ran for 123 yards, but he kind of had his way running for 5.1 a carry too.
Yeah, it was not exactly the.
It's kind of a bloodletting, so he didn't really.
He had over 100 at the half. So I doubt he carried much in the second half.
That Wisconsin game appears to have set offensive football back 80 years. Purdue was 9 of 33 for 81 yards, averaging 2.5 yards an attempt. And with one interception, and Wisconsin was 9 of 19 for 115 yards, so it's much better.
And Purdue's rushing also was 2.1 yards a carry too.
They had 141 yards of total offense.
Yeah. Clay was really the only good thing that I saw, and Purdue just, I mean,
what happened?
Man, they fell behind 10-0 early, and then they did everything in their power to make sure that Wisconsin had a 30-point lead going into that.
Yeah, that's just crazy. I mean, especially after, Purdue's just insane. Like, they beat Ohio State, they lose to Northern Illinois, and then they put this thing up against Wisconsin.
Yeah.
It's probably why the Boiler blogger was not in a great mood. We didn't actually talk to him because he had a conflict that came up. But, yeah, he's probably grumpy. Basketball season's around the corner. So back to Wisconsin and
Indiana.
We have a pick for Indiana.
Yeah, the Hoosiers have been a pretty good team against the number all season, and I wouldn't have any trouble thinking that they could at least cover a spread as an underdog next week against Wisconsin. Other than the Ohio State and Virginia games, this year I felt like they've outplayed the teams they've been lined up against. I guess I'm just hoping that trend kind of continues. And I think Wisconsin might be looking ahead a little bit. They have a tendency to play down and up to their opponents. So.
All right, and moving on to Western Michigan at Michigan State. Michigan State lost a shootout to Minnesota last week. Western Michigan, a MAC opponent that Michigan beat 31-7 early in the year, should be probably a comfortable win for Michigan State, but they did lose to Central, although I think Central's a considerably better team than Michigan State.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I meant Western Michigan.
Yeah, you would think that they could, that it should be, an easy win.
What the heck? The Big Ten makes no sense to me.
Michigan State, they spotted Minnesota some points yesterday early on, and they could never catch up, but yet they had plenty of chances to still win the game, and they just couldn't.
Weber,
with 8 minutes left in the game, they were within a point, so.
Mm-hmm. Weber averaged more than 20 yards of completion.
Yeah. What's more disappointing? Michigan being 5-4 at this point, or Michigan State being 4-5?
From preseason expectations, probably Michigan State. From where the teams were going into the Michigan State game, Michigan has obviously disappointed much more since.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, Michigan State is not exactly tearing it up.
Yeah, but considering where they were and where they are now, you would have thought that they would. I guess you might have thought that they were just going to go into the tank. Having lost to Central, then the heartbreaker against Notre Dame and the Michigan game really helped turn around their season. So
that could end up being their season. When it's all said and done, they could. I don't think they're any better. They're maybe a little bit better bet because they've got because it's Western Michigan next week. But I think they're maybe just a little bit better bet to get to 6-6 right now than Michigan.
They're not going to be
definitely a downgrade from their preseason expectation.
Penn State, who's their other opponent?
At Purdue.
It's a race for the Motor City in Michigan this year. So,
man, I was determined to bring this up a notch. I found a way to bring it down a notch inadvertently.
What?
I was hoping to bring it up a notch, and I went ahead and brought it down a notch inadvertently.
I think we're beyond the point of
bringing it up a notch. I guess I'm just surprised that Michigan State is 4-5. I guess I was really surprised at how...
I'm not. I mean, they were basically 6-6 team last year. They're 6-16 this year.
That's, and you take away their best player and then their starting quarterback, and you can...
Well, Cousins is better than Hoyer ever was.
Yeah, but Cousins is better than Hoyer. I figured
but,
that.
But if you know, going into the season, you didn't necessarily know that either.
Yeah. So. All right, so that's, I assume, Michigan State over Western Michigan. We didn't really talk about it.
Yeah. Key positioning in the final state rankings. You know, with the Western Michigan State game, with Michigan State winning. Hopefully Michigan gets a chance against Central in December to maybe make their statement.
Or hopefully they don't, because they probably lose. Illinois at Minnesota. Two teams coming off somewhat surprising wins, I would say.
Yeah, I would say.
Illinois, very surprising.
Two teams that I think we've all dogged the last couple weeks. You know, it's in Minnesota. I think the Gophers will win. I guess I don't really think that Illinois turned a corner yesterday so much with the win, and I just don't like their chances going out on the road after such a win. And, you know, I watched Minnesota last night, and I know that they got some turnovers, but that's kind of what they do. They get a lot of turnovers. And I think it's reasonable to assume that they're going to get their fair share at home against Illinois. And sadly, I think all the problems that Illinois had will crop up, and Minnesota will be able to take, you know, advantage of it. And I say that sadly because, you know, we weren't able to do that for four quarters yesterday, and I think Minnesota, you know, probably will, like everybody else has this year, do that. You know, they lost Indiana, you know, by two solid touchdowns. The game wasn't really that close. So I don't think we should assume that Illinois can go up to Minnesota and win the game. So I would take them, and I would also lay whatever points the odds makers have put on the board.
All righty. Moving on to the headlining game of the week, Ohio State at Penn State.
Yeah, I can't wait to watch this game. I think it'll be interesting. I think it's got to be an under game. I mean, I don't really think, off the top of my head, I would think that it's going to be a pretty low-scoring game, wouldn't you guys think?
Yeah, I mean, especially with Pryor versus the Penn State defense and then that offensive line of Penn State versus the Ohio State defensive line. It's probably going to be low scoring.
Now, I would expect that Penn State's probably going to be favored by about a field goal. My gut, I like Penn State to win the game. I think they're playing better football than Ohio State right now. I don't think we know exactly where Ohio State is right now. I mean, I don't really have a firm grip on what they can and cannot do. And I just feel a little bit more comfortable with Penn State, the last 3 weeks against Big Ten competition. I mean, you know, it hasn't been the best competition. But it was, you know, impressive enough to me from start to finish in all those games to think that I just don't think the Buckeyes are going to score a lot of points against Penn State. And I think at home, I think Darrell Clark's solid season will continue. And I actually think they're going to maybe win this game easier than people think.
All righty. So that is a pick for Penn State over Ohio State. And then the last game of the week, Purdue versus Michigan.
Do I have to actually make a call on this game?
The true headlining game of the weekend.
Yeah.
I don't know. Purdue's just all over the place. I don't know what you could possibly expect from them other than chaos.
Yeah. Bet the over on turnovers combined by both teams if you can find that prop bet, right, guys?
Yeah.
I mean, it's literally going to probably all come down to which team implodes the least impactful on the game, if that made any English sense here on a weekend morning. I just don't think either of these teams can go four quarters right now without shooting themselves in the foot, so whichever one can do the least damage to their feet might end up pulling out ahead. You know, I it's weird how, you know, you kind of feel like Michigan can't beat anybody now after losing to Illinois, but after watching Purdue, you know, I think that any bullish feelings we had about the Boilermakers after that little mid-October surge might be kind of tainted as well.
Mm-hmm. So what do you actually see as happening? Do you think Michigan will be a favorite at home against the Boilermakers?
Yeah, I think Michigan will still be favored. This is, you know, one of the few games that we never saw a line on beforehand. So it'll be intriguing to see. You know, and again, we're taping this before the lines come out. But I would think Michigan would still be favored. Let me see if I can't try to guess. I don't think it'll be as small as a field goal. I don't think it'll be as big as a touchdown. Yeah, so I think they'll probably be favored by about 5 or 6 points. That would just be my guess. I mean, I think, you know, you got to realize that the public is probably just as sour on Purdue as they are of Michigan right now. And Michigan probably still has a lot more name value. You know, people actually can visualize Tate Forsyth coming back against Notre Dame. So I think the line might be a little bit more inflated than you guys think.
So do you think it'll be
than any of us would think? Because you know Michigan obviously shouldn't be laying more than a field goal to anybody on any field.
So you think it even if Michigan's favorite, it's probably not a safe bet to take them to cover the spread then?
No, you know honestly no. And you know I mean. I sometimes have a tendency to look at the things, you know, with the maize and blue Kool-Aid running through my veins. But the bottom line is, if this was any other team, you know, I would throw out the line of they don't have a good enough defense to be trusted as a favorite. How you know you can't keep your head start if you're constantly giving up big plays. So I would be reluctant, you know, with Michigan as chalk against anybody. I would still think that the over though would be a good bet. I mean, the over has not hit for a couple weeks now, but it's hit quite frequently in the Rodriguez era. Frankly, the only reason why it hasn't hit the last 2 weeks is just because Michigan hasn't their quarterbacks can't stop turning it over. You know, if they could stop turning it over, both the Penn State and the Illinois games would have gone over the total real easily. Of course, you got two teams though that turn the ball over. You know, and that could do one of two things. If you're a total player, it's either going to give both teams awesome setups for scores, and you're still going to end up cashing easily. Or it's going to kill every team's score, and you're going to be looking at a game with you know 600 to 700 yards of offense, but yet a score in the teens, and you'll be like, you know, what the F? So,
yeah.
You know, and until the Wisconsin game, Purdue had been a really solid play catching points all season. You know, they covered against the Irish, they covered against Oregon, they obviously covered against Ohio State, and they were an underdog the week before and covered, didn't they, or something like that? Anyway, I thought I saw four underdog covers on the season. Until the Wisconsin game. So kind of like, you know, I mean, I thought Indiana earlier, you know, they're 6-2, mostly an underdog most of the way against the spread. You know, Purdue is kind of the same.
And there you have it, I guess.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess hopefully maybe we can see more Brandon Miner running on Saturday. that would make me feel better.
Yeah, I mean, whatever. All right, thanks for coming on, Jamie.
All right, man.
Thank you for listening to the highly energetic MGO Podcast 1.11. We talked to Jamie Mack, as we so often do, about the Big Ten this upcoming weekend. And we also talked about Michigan hanging tough against the mighty Fighting Illini of Illinois. And Brian is giving me the most condescending look. I love it.
Do you want to kill a hooker?
It's a party in the U.S. Yeah.